Hey, everybody, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 306, the one where I talk about Pokemon Legends Arceus, because the day this episode comes out is the day that that game comes out. And I reviewed that game for NintendoWorldReport.com. Go check it out on our YouTube channel, The Written Piece. I put a lot of time and effort into it, and helping me along with that by doing the video editing is my wonderful co-host, John Raritan.
Hello, everybody. Did we plan to release episodes on Friday for this purpose, or was this just a happy accident that we always
happy
get to do this?
Happy accident.
It works out really well.
I think it's because we're like Wednesday nights is a good time to record, and
yeah,
I think RFN usually does, like, if they do or go out early, it's Saturday, normally Sunday.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to do it the same day then. And then Friday, because you don't want to have something where, like, oh, we recorded it on Monday and it went out on Friday.
Right. You want the minimal so that you can talk about news and stuff, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It works.
Yeah, it works out. Yeah, because now this, we've got some listener mail that we'll hit on, one that will kind of lead into our Arceus discussion. And by the time this comes out, the embargo will be lifted. So I can tell you that the main story is probably about 25 to 30 hours. Factoring in side quests and post-game, this is probably a 50-hour-plus game if you get really into it. That was something that was embargoed.
I guess we'll throw out a general, like, I mean, we won't go, like, super into the story, but I guess light spoiler warning.
Yeah, there are some things. If you were trying to go into this completely fresh, I guess just be warned.
Yeah.
If you're not going to, like, tell you what happens in the end cutscene, you can look for leakers on YouTube for that. But I will talk about, like, the beginning of the game, and there's some things in the beginning of the game that marketing has not spoiled or not revealed. I don't really think it's like a huge spoiler because it's literally like minute one, but it was something that was embargoed. So I'll give that heads up.
Yeah.
Because it's something that is not really, I haven't seen it widely talked about.
And okay.
It's kind of neat.
Yeah. But we might say random things like Haunter is in the game, which might totally spoil the experience for you, which was something we haven't been allowed to say until now. So.
Yeah,
you heard it here.
I can. Yeah, Gengar.
Finally,
Gengar's in the game.
Yeah, well, that stands to reason.
Yeah. But I'll save some of the other really, like, the things that I think are silly that I couldn't directly say. I'll save that for when we're talking specifically about the game.
Yeah,
but let's get to our listener mail that I think is kind of related to this. But it's from Vince, and he says, fundamentally, I think Zelda and Metroid games are very similar. You're generally exploring, trying to get from one puzzle room to another. Progress is gated by item progression, like you can't get to the secret area until you have the bombs or magic hammer. Zelda's a little different because it has NPCs to talk to in towns, and there's a perspective difference. What would a Metroid in the style of Breath of the Wild look like? Would it even work? Would Metroid be undermined if you had all the abilities from the beginning like Breath of the Wild did? Thanks and keep up the good work.
There's a couple interesting questions there. I'm going to answer the last one first and say that I kind of think Zelda is a little bit undermined by having all of the items from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the Zelda problem sticks out more with A Link Between Worlds.
Yeah.
Like, I think Breath of the Wild does a good job of giving you the tools and then, like, playing within those tools. Whereas I think A Link Between Worlds, like, you can, I mean, it does kind of make sense that A Link Between Worlds would be a little rougher because it was kind of the groundwork for what they did with Breath of the Wild. But, like, the way where, like, you would have to rent or buy the dungeon items and do them in any order, like, I don't think that worked as well. But I think in Breath of the Wild, it's not as much of a detriment.
Yeah. And I think they really limit the number of items they, like, as far as, like, the number of key items you get. Like,
yeah.
There's four.
don't exclude the camera.
That's true. And the amiibo functionality.
And you do have the champions item. I mean, like, it's not quite like getting a hook shot, but those are definitely abilities that you get.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. I guess they don't let you get into new areas, I guess,
yeah.
Which is what I would commonly think of as items is.
I feel like this is, and getting off the subject of the question for a hot second.
No, a half an hour of Zelda item talk.
But I am curious because I haven't really thought about it like this with Breath of the Wild 2. And I think it's something that just wouldn't work within the framework of what they're doing with Breath of the Wild. But what if they tried to do, like, more, I mean, maybe it's not executed in the same way, but having items, like, it is a little bit like, it'd be cool to see a hook shot in the world of Breath of the Wild too.
Outside of just giving you that absolute freedom, like, there isn't that much reason that Breath of the Wild has to give you all of your Sheikah Slate stuff in the tutorial.
Like,
they could have put one of those at the end of each dungeon or something like that. I just don't think they wanted to gate the game that way.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where I don't think I totally disagree with you that it undermines it a little bit.
And I don't mean it makes it bad or anything. I just mean that, like, as far as it being Zelda, it does make it feel less like Zelda.
It's a very deliberate thing that they did by having, you know, bombs and all this, and stasis and magnesis and everything available. Like, the tutorial is basically like, you get your arsenal and then leave that area. And you do get, you know, like, the stamina upgrades and the weapons that you get and stuff like that. Like, because if you do think about what traditional Zelda items are, you basically see all of, like, you know, the bow and arrow. Like, that's there. Yeah. I mean, slingshot is basically just crappy bow and arrow. You do have boomerang weapons. I mean, even like, the Deku Leaf shows up, sort of.
Yeah. The game just can't rely on you having any of them at any given time, which makes them less. Which, I mean, I think Link Between Worlds did have some of that problem, too, where they never knew, outside of whatever item you needed to open the dungeon's door, they never knew what items you were going to have.
Yeah. But going back to the Metroid part of this.
Yes.
And I do think whatever, I mean, I don't think you'll ever see a 2D Metroid that is like Breath of the Wild level of, like, we're going to revamp the perspective that you look at video games. Like,
you mean that in the context of, like, completely reinventing the formula as opposed to, like, being open world?
Yeah. Like, because I feel like the 2D Metroid formula, like, as evidenced by, I don't know, like, every 2D Metroid game, because there's a lot of, I mean, like, you look at, like, how Zero Mission is really built around sequence breaking and speed running. You know, Fusion is much more linear. Dread kind of combines, like, the best of Super Metroid and Fusion into one thing. Like, I don't know, like I can't really picture what a Breath of the Wild for 2D Metroid would look like, other than, like, a really good 2D Metroid game.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess that's kind of the inherent thing of that element of Breath of the Wild, where it completely reinvents how the game even works. It's hard to imagine what that would be, because that's what makes it so. That's what made Breath of the Wild stand out so much, is that we couldn't imagine what Breath of the Wild would be until we were playing it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff that just makes sense when you play Breath of the Wild. You're like, oh, okay, I kind of see where the pieces were laid.
Mm-hmm.
What I do think appeals or goes in more in line with Metroid is, I think that I don't know if Metroid Prime 4 will be the Breath of the Wild for the Metroid series, but I don't know what the hell that game's going to be. Like, I don't think Metroid Prime 4 can just be like, we made Metroid Prime 3, but in HD. Like, you can't really do, I don't think you can do that. I think there's, how game design has changed in the past, 15 plus years since, oh my God, it has been almost 15 years since Metroid Prime 3 came out.
Mm-hmm.
That is nuts. The dystopian makes you feel real old fact. Is it's the difference in time between the original NES Metroid and Metroid Prime will very likely be the same difference of time between Metroid Prime 3 and Metroid Prime 4,
if not shorter.
Because it's 16 years to go from Metroid NES to Metroid Prime, and we are we will be very close to 15 years for Metroid Prime 3 right now, and Metroid Prime 4 ain't coming soon, kids.
Yeah.
I hate to break it to you. Maybe this year, but, like, I doubt it. Like, that seems best case scenario, and a pandemic happened. So best case scenario is not happening. And I think it might be longer, because I think that Metroid Prime 4 could be very ambitious. Like, it's kind of like Metroid Breath of the Wild.
Well, and I will point out something that I first heard about it semi-recently. I don't remember when this information first came out, but at one point, like, during early development for Metroid Prime 3, that game was intended to be an open world game where you could just freely fly around in Samus's gunship. And then they remembered that they were making a Wii game, and they were like, oh, we can't do that. And they just hit up against technical limitations. So I think there's, like, a reasonable chance that, you know, they may, I mean, you don't, it's obviously not the exact same staff, but there are the people at the top carry over between Metroid Prime 3 and Prime 4.
And even the Nintendo influence, like Kensuke Tanabe is still the producer on the game.
Right, right, exactly. So I do think there's probably the possibility that there's a group of people going like, okay, remember what we wanted to do with Prime 3, but we couldn't because of the technology limitations? We could do that now. And so I do think that there's a very, like, we obviously know nothing about Prime 4, but the interest in making Prime open world is definitely there. And like, even the original Prime wasn't that far off from it. Like, it did present you with a continuous world with no loading screens. And, you know, it was obviously an open world full of hallways. But
how is that different from games that came out last year?
Right. Yeah, that's just congratulations. You made Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah.
But like, conceptually, that is, it's along the right lines. It wouldn't be out of character for Prime 4 to go completely open world. I don't know if you get Breath of the Wild out of that, but that element of it, I think, is a very, very real possibility, and maybe even a likelihood. I don't know if I want that or not. I think one of the things that I liked about, all three Prime games, but especially the first two, was that it felt like this very well-conceived puzzle box.
Yeah.
Where, like, it was just this one continuous world where everything you did kind of unlocked just a little bit more of it, and you made it a little farther in. The first Prime, when it came out, reminded me a lot of Myst, which, yay, I get to mention Myst on another episode of Connectivity.
I mean, I do not hold Myst as dear as you do, but I agree. Like, Myst and Metroid Prime definitely have, you know, it might be a little bit surface level, but definitely comps can be made.
Yeah, it's that you know, the haunting loneliness of being dropped into this world, not knowing where to go, but just kind of looking for an unlocked door and going that way as far as you can until you find some puzzle that unlocks another door somewhere else, and then going back to that door. And it has that feeling of loneliness and being a little bit spooky and being just full of puzzles to complete. And I don't know, and I say this with Breath of the Wild in mind, I don't know that an open world game can do that.
Yeah.
In the same way that a more contained game can.
I kind of want my Metroid games to be claustrophobic. And
yeah,
an open air game is not going to be that.
Yeah, because there is Metroid has a horror element to it. Most of them anyway. And I don't want to lose that. And especially if Zelda is going to continue being Breath of the Wild, and you point this out in your email, that the two games have a lot in common. If Zelda is going to keep being Breath of the Wild, then to me that, I almost want Metroid to stay Metroid more because of that. I like that game design, and I don't want to lose it in favor of just everything being Breath of the Wild now. That's something that happened a lot during like the Xbox 360 and into like the PS4, around, Xbox
Assassin's
One era.
Creed and just every Ubisoft game feeling the same.
Yep, and every game needing to be like Ghost Recon, it's open world now. Why is it open world? Because it has to be open world.
Yeah,
and
because we want people want to play it forever.
Yeah, I do. There is value in a nice, structured, linear game. It's something that I really appreciate in like Skyward Sword, which is very much a Metroid game.
Skyward Sword definitely. I had a half written, it's kind of fizzled out because it's just that, like, I feel like I wasn't saying anything that wasn't, it was already obvious, but like Skyward Sword's just a Metroidvania.
than most Metroids are.
I do feel like, I don't know, with Prime 4, and this is just spitballing very broad concepts, like I feel like you could make that expansive open world feeling have a bit of loneliness and maybe even some kind of horror. And maybe, I mean, something that where it is like there is a surface of a planet that's like desolate. Maybe there's some kind of creature that shows up on a Bowser's Fury like timer. And you are on this overworld and you're trying to, like, you know, maybe you're looking for answers beneath the surface. So you have to find different access points to get to different biomes and stuff that are underneath. And maybe that's your connective tissue. Almost like those are shrines, but hopefully more expansive.
Shrines, but like they're all kind of secretly interconnected with each other. Yeah. And I wouldn't have thought it would work for Zelda. So like Metroid could totally prove me wrong and it could be great. And I do, like, I think even Zelda could probably, I think there's some balancing to be done with Zelda where I think they'll probably go back a little ways toward the Zelda formula to find that sweet spot. Because I don't know if I want Zelda to just be Breath of the Wild forever. Like, I do want them to regain a little bit of the formula, which I think there's room for. And so maybe Metroid can find a middle ground.
Yeah, it would be cool if they made a new 2D Zelda.
That would be nice.
They kind of haven't done that since, like, Minish Cap.
Yeah.
You know, I know technically Link Between Worlds is a new Zelda, but it's like we made a new Zelda from the map from the Super Nintendo game.
Yeah.
I love Cadence of Hyrule. That's not necessarily a traditional Zelda game. Very good, though. Link's Awakening is a remake. Like, it is that thing when people are just like, oh, just keep on making remakes. It's like, well, why don't they just make new games? And I understand, like, some of that is we'd like to release a video game sooner. And, you know, it's easier taking a design that already exists and upgrading that. I understand that. But, like, it is thinking about, like, a wholly new 2D Zelda that does not, like, slavishly rely on either a previous 2D or 3D Zelda game. Because I understand Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks are, I guess, technically 2D Zelda games, but they feel not totally the same as, like, you know, your Oracles and your Minish Caps.
They're not as good.
It's kind of like how Super Mario 3D Land and 3D World are technically 3D Mario games.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
They don't feel like they're in the same, like, it's like a different flavor of 3D Mario.
Yeah, this is good, but it's not quite what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's like this weird hybrid of 2D and 3D that, like, is not, it's not the open world sandbox. It's not quite the top down 2D dungeon crawling stuff. But anyway,
I'd like it to be sprite based if they do go back. I want a nice, that's every time I boot up Four Swords Adventures and I see like a nice sprite based Zelda game on a console that doesn't need to do sprite based stuff, and like the camera's like zooming around dynamically in and out as you're playing, and I'm like, this looks incredible.
It's a really good looking game.
Like, why don't they make more games like this?
They probably won't. Probably won't be sprite based, which sucks.
Yeah, but man, that game is pretty, and I want more of it.
I guess whatever Metroid Breath of the Wild could possibly be, I just hope it's Metroid Prime 4. Because I really, the more time goes on, and, you know, I'll give Retro time. Like, it is, I mean, now we're just around the 3-year anniversary from when they publicly took over development.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is a chance we see something about Metroid Prime 4 this year. I don't think it's coming out this year. If I had to peg it, it would be 2023 at best, because I think the pandemic would have also have gotten in the way, because it's, you know, a Japanese producer working with a developer in Texas.
Well, and I mean, on a pure, like, just marketing level, like, you don't need to put out Prime 4 this year. If you really are putting out Breath of the Wild 2 this year, you don't also need Prime 4.
Yeah.
Because I do think those probably apply to kind of an overlap in audiences. So you don't necessarily need them in the same year.
The demographic for Prime 4 is probably one that, like, you would want to appeal to Breath of the Wild fans. Because it's like that, okay, like, it's a little bit more adult. It's not kiddie old Mario. It's serious Samus.
It's so weird to live in a world where I'm looking at Prime 4 and being like, boy, it's got a high bar to match with the last 2D Metroid game.
Yeah, like, Dread was so good.
That is not something I expected to be saying going into the lead up for Prime 4. But yeah, we are entering that time frame with it where it's realistic to expect, like I think we might get a somewhat substantial trailer this year. I think that's a real possibility. I agree. Like, it's not coming out, but I think we could get a decent trailer.
I don't feel bad, because this rumor kind of went wide, and I guess, like, I mean, time will tell. I feel pretty confident that what I'm about to say this year will make me feel smart. I am pretty sure we're gonna see a Metroid Prime remake, remaster, whatever the hell you want to call it.
Yeah,
probably in the same vein as, like, a Skyward Sword HD, and that, like, they'll probably call it, like, Metroid Prime HD, and it'll be something where people will debate on the internet whether or not it's a remaster or a remake.
Though the rumors around that I've heard were leaning more into the remake side, but I guess this is also a game that we've heard rumored
yeah,
for
yeah.
the past, like, what, 5 years in a row? So a lot of these rumors are coming from people that I believe have good sources. However, I've been hurt before.
So my prediction is that I think that Metroid Prime 1 remake is coming out before November of this year, which November of this year is the 20th anniversary of Metroid Prime. Feel old. Wow.
Yeah.
And I don't think Prime 4 is coming out this year, but I think Metroid Prime 1 remake is. And alongside the reveal of that, or possibly the release date confirmation, we will get some kind of Metroid Prime 4 teaser, whether it's something you know, more substantial, or if it's like the equivalent of the Breath of the Wild 2 announcement from a couple years ago. I do think that when they show Metroid Prime 4, just because of the fact that they announced it almost 5 years ago, they can't just do like, here's a minute long cinematic. Like, no, you need to actually show and talk about this game. You don't need to talk about it a lot, but you need to be like, all right, it's a first person shooter. There's going to be, you know, dungeons that you explore, interconnected world, multiple planets, what have you. You need to like set some kind of expectation for what that game actually is.
Yeah, you need some in-engine footage of the game. Yeah, 100% agree. I will also, I think we might see, I was thinking about how they'd be putting out Metroid Prime Remake in a similar vein to Wind Waker HD, where it was like, we're not done with the new one yet, but here's a really nice old one. And so I think what they'll do is much like that, Metroid Prime Remake will be in-house at like Retro or something, which I think that was part of the rumors that have been circulating around.
That's what I think was talked about.
And then they'll do Metroid Prime 4 still won't be out, and they'll do Metroid Prime 2 and 3, but those will be done. Those will be licensed out and will be much more of just a texture update, and people will be upset. Just like Twilight Princess HD.
Yeah, and I think wasn't there something, like, I feel like there was another, I mean, like, the Mass Effect game, like, the Legendary Edition was kind of, like, Mass Effect 1 was widely redone, and the other two were just kind of like, yeah, we updated it a little bit.
They were all weird. That's a weird, I don't remember if I've talked about that on Connectivity before, but that remaster is the same concept as Mario 3D All-Stars, where it's emulation of the original version of the game with new stuff injected into the ROM as opposed to like an actual native like port to the new systems. But when Mass Effect does it, it's cool.
it's
a weird, it's a very, like, I think there's still, even if you play that on PS5, I think it's still running on like Unreal Engine 3, but they have a PS5 emulator for Unreal Engine 3 to get it to work. And then the newer systems just kind of brute force through to get better performance out of it. It's weird. It's a weird remaster.
But yeah, so talking about the concept of like the Breath of the Wild version of a game, I remember when Pokemon Legends Arceus was revealed a year ago, people were like, oh, it's finally Pokemon of the Wild. And we learned more about it now after I've spent like 40 plus hours with it. Pokemon Legends Arceus is very much not an open world game. There are open areas, but it is more like the Monster Hunter Zone concept is something that's been kind of talked about a lot. I don't think it's exactly, I think some of the Monster Hunter comparisons are a little overblown, but I feel like calling Arceus a Monster Hunter game is like calling, you know, Banjo-Kazooie a Metroidvania. Like, I think it's that kind of thing where like, okay, technically, yes, but like it's a little bit like there's underneath the hood, there's a lot of differences. You do have one core town that, you know, you get quests from. It builds up over time as you do quests. You do have like a rank that as you complete more of the Pokedex, you rank up. So those are definitely very Monster Hunter-y. And then the areas that you go to, there's a couple different like sections. Like, we've seen the Obsidian Field Lands. That's the first area you go to. And those specific areas are open. And there's a couple of them. There's like an ice one. There's a beach one. There's a swamp area that looks like crap. But you do have these areas where you go around. And I think the thing that struck me about it, and where I kind of settled on the fact that Pokemon Legends Arceus, it is not Breath of the Wild in that it's an open world game. It's Breath of the Wild in the fact that they were like, okay, we've been doing Pokemon games like this for 20 plus years. Let's go back to square one, revamp some concepts, and you know, kind of start fresh, so to speak. And I don't know necessarily if Arceus is going to be the future of the series. It could be, you know, Gen 9 or the next generation of Pokemon. It's just going to be like Sword and Shield with a new hat. Like, they could just go that route. I hope they don't.
That'd be so disappointing.
Yeah. But, like, Arceus is so cool because it does things that, like, it really is, like, in my head. When I played Pokemon Red and Blue, what I envisioned, and, like, definitely, like, I was the dorky 10-year-old kid when Pokemon Red and Blue came out, that, like, I would, like, walk around the woods near my house and pretend that I was like, oh, there's a Pokemon over there I can catch. And, like, Arceus feels like that experience as being a kid, mm-hmm. and being like, oh, like I'm walking through this area and oh, like there's a Pidgey over there, I'm gonna try to sneak up behind it and catch it. And it's something that was never totally replicated in the mainline games, where like, okay, you do have the random battles, but it's like not quite the same, like because you go into that screen, it's a turn-based affair, it's very mechanical. Like there's I love those games, I love Pokemon games, but a lot of those interactions just became very staid and similar over the years, because it was like, okay, I'm going to go into this battle. You know, I'm going to either fight them, knock them out, get the experience, or try to whittle their health down, but not too much, and then try to catch them with a Pokeball. And that's why stuff like Pokemon Go and even Pokemon Let's Go was so revelatory, because it changed how you did that. Where Pokemon Let's Go, like the just catching and battling was completely divorced. And Pokemon Go really amped up that feeling of discovery of I'm mm-hmm. walking around this park near my house, and oh god, there's a Dratini right in front of me. Like I'm gonna go try to catch it. Oh no, it ran away. Damn it. That's what Arceus does when you're mm-hmm. walking around the area. Like it does get where the amount of Pokemon that you have, or the amount of Pokemon that you can catch, is like there is definitely a limit to it. And like, yeah, replaying the Obsidian Field lands as I am in the post game, like I'm seeing a lot of Bidoof and Shinx and Starly, and I have no reason to really interact with these Pokemon anymore.
But that's the nice thing about not having like random encounters. And this is something that's been in the previous few, but like, you don't want to deal with Bidoofs anymore? Cool. Just walk around with
them.
Yeah,
I can just run around with them. Like, I can walk around and be like, oh no, actually an Eevee spawned near the Bidoof. I'm going to try to go catch the Eevee, but the Eevees are real skittish. But you don't need to necessarily fight the Pokemon in order to catch them. Like, you can just literally sneak up to them, and it makes it this incredible stealth encounter stuff where, like, I'll point out Abra, a notorious Pokemon that, like, if you try to get them in random battles, like, you just throw a Pokeball right away and pray, because if that, mm-hmm. if that Abra can act, it's going to teleport away. So when I first saw an Abra in this game, like I'm like trying to go in the tall grass to make sure it doesn't see me. There's that moment where they have like they'll have like the word bubble that has three dots is when they like notice you, and then they'll mm-hmm. have the red exclamation point when they're alerted.
It's very Metal Gear Solid.
It is very Metal Gear Solid. But like there's been so many times where it's like, all right, I'm gonna try to sneak up and try to get this Pokemon. Like you have a lot of different types of Pokemon balls that you have. I mean, you have your Poke, your Great, your Ultra, you have all that jazz. There's also ones, there's like heavier ones that if you sneak up behind a Pokemon and use it, then it'll have a greater effect of you know, increase the odds of catching them. There's also like feather balls that, like if it's a flying Pokemon, it'll do better. And I think that one might fly a little farther too. But that also, like, I mean, that kind of ups the risk reward because like, okay, I could try to just like throw a Great Ball at this Abra from far away. Or if I try to get closer to it, I can use like the heavy ball, and like then I'll have a better shot if I sneak up behind it. And you even get bonuses like part of the Pokedex registration, which is really cool. You do have to catch every Pokemon in this game in order to complete the Pokedex, but to fully complete the Pokedex, you have to complete research tasks for each Pokemon, which at first sounds like a lot of bullshit busy work, but in practice, it like you're spending time trying to learn the Pokemon more, as opposed to just like, well, I caught the Buizel, I caught the Ponyta, and I'm done. No, instead, like, okay, I need to defeat this Ponyta with some water attacks. It's also a good way, like, if you look at the research task list and it's like, defeat it with dark attacks, you're like, oh cool, it's weak to dark.
Oh sure. Yeah.
Or sometimes have it use specific attacks, specific abilities, even feeding it food. Sometimes it'll be tied to side quests. Like, there's an early one where, like, you need to find some Bidoofs that are, like, I don't know, doing shit across the world. And then you go get these Bidoofs, and then, like, that'll add to your Bidoof research. Bidoof, Bidoof, Bidoof. but all like, the, like, it all funnels into each other. And even when you like, once you hit a research level of 10 for a Pokemon, then they are completed in the Pokedex. But you could still even do more things for that Pokemon. So even if you're like, fighting a Pokemon that you already, you know, got to research level 10, you might be able to, you know, go further in that. There are some Pokemon that, you know, new evolution methods where you have to use specific attacks, like, and basically, like, max that out in the research tasks.
Yeah.
It's so cool. I feel like this is not how I started talking about it, but I just unfurled.
No. Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, there's just so much, like, it was crazy watching, because, like, I have not played this at the time of recording, but I edited the review, and so I watched a lot of Neil's footage, and it was crazy going through it, and, like, it took me a while to find footage of you fighting anything, because I'd just be watching, and you'd go out into a field, and you'd see Pokemon, and you would just go catch them, and without ever queuing a battle, like, and there would be times where, like, the Pokemon would escape from the Pokeball, but that didn't immediately mean, like, oh, now we have to fight them. It just meant that Pokemon didn't get caught, and if it was, like, aggressive, it might attack you, but otherwise, it might just kind of walk away.
Yeah. Yeah, like, some Pokemon, like, if you don't catch them, they'll just be like, well, shit, I'm just going to walk away.
What was
here.
That? Yeah, so it's just, it's such a, and like you were referencing, you know, Pokemon Go and Pokemon Let's Go, and how they separated the concept of catching Pokemon versus fighting Pokemon, and it seems like you mentioned how it's unclear whether this is where they're going with the RPGs, or if this is a spinoff, or what this is. It almost feels like this is a follow-up to Go and Let's Go more so than it's a follow-up to Sword and Shield.
So I kind of bristle at that a little bit. I've definitely seen some chatter online after the reviews went up. We're recording this the evening after the reviews went up, mm-hmm. on the January 26th. And people kind of talking about, like, they finally did something new after all these years. And it's like, well, like, the groundwork for this was laid in past games. Like, in addition to what happened with Go and Let's Go, I do look at, like, Pokemon Sun and Moon, how, I mean, it's like, it's a straight line through that game. And I really enjoyed Sun and Moon, and then played Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, and then realized that, like, oh no, like, even Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon being a little bit different, it still was like, oh, this game is, like, achingly linear in kind of a boring way. But Sun and Moon did have the stuff where the traditional gym battles were different, and instead you fought, like, potentially racially insensitive totem Pokemon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You had, like, boss fights.
Yeah, yeah. But you basically had boss fights. You would enter an area, and there you would have to, like, figure out how to, you know, I think there's, like, the Alolan Marowak, I think, is one of them. And they would kind of build the boss fights in that. And Sword and Shield with the wild area, I think a lot of the wild area is seen in Legends Arceus.
Mm-hmm.
And runs at a much better frame rate. Might look worse, but definitely runs at a better frame rate.
I don't know if it looks... We should have done a comparison for that. Because I'm thinking back on the wild area, and I think Sword and Shield, when you're not in the wild area, I think those games honestly look pretty okay. It's kind of just the wild area.
There's
bad.
The one town, what is it like? I forget the name of it, but, like, it's very interestingly lit. That's another thing where, like, I mean, the things that aren't the wild area are also the less interesting parts of the game, because it's like, it's just like, okay, you walk in this straight line and then go back to the wild area.
Well, the stuff that wasn't the wild area, it's crazy how this came up with Pokemon Snap too, but it's crazy how if you have a locked off camera in a hallway, it's really easy to make that hallway look really good.
Yeah.
As opposed to if you have a planet, like, making that planet look universally as good as that hallway is hard. I remember, like, when because Pokemon Snap got revealed, you know, shortly after Sword and Shield came out, and everyone's like, well, why don't Sword and Shield look this good? And it's like, because Snap is literally a hallway. Like, yeah. It's a Disney yeah. World ride. It's not this yep. big old world. So Arceus definitely has that problem amplified. And I don't know yeah. what state their engine is in, but it looks like shit.
Yeah, it looks really bad.
It seems to run okay, though. Like, the frame rate seemed okay.
Yeah, like, that's the credit that I'll give it. And there really is, like, you know, I'm spending a lot of time in this game. Like, yes, I have to brutally admit, this game is visually unappealing. The top rope comment is so... my wife was replaying Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And actually got it to the point where I started replaying Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And then I got the code for Pokemon Legends Arceus and started playing it. And had it on the TV. Like, I was recording footage for you, John.
Yay.
And I asked her, I was like, all right, what do you think? Like, you've been playing Breath of the Wild on the TV. Like, how does this game compare? And the comment was that this looks like Breath of the Wild, but for GameCube. Which, like, I just kind of was like, that's right.
Yeah. Like, you sent me another one from her.
Yeah, it was like they were like, we can make Breath of the Wild, and then it turns out that they couldn't.
Yeah. They should put that on the back of the box.
But like, it is the kind of thing where like there are spots where it looks good. And mm-hmm. I saw this come up in that like the sky looks really good, and then you look at the ground and it just takes all that niceness away. But it's like the ground textures look bad, the water and lava look horrendous.
They're incredibly bad. Like, it's a very clear looping. Like, the water is like a very small texture that's being looped over and over again, very obviously.
Yeah. And there's also this weird thing that happens that I know, like, you know, I mean, it's not a true open world game, and if you do go to the edge of the map, it'll be like, you can't go this far. But there's like a fog that overlays when you get closer to the edge of the map, and it looks terrible. Like, and it's stuff like that that just kind of adds up. And it is the second area that you go to, the Crimson Mire Lands. It's a swampy area, and that's when, like, I just kind of, as I was walking around there, I'm like, this just, it looks gross. Like, not in a good way. It looks, I think I made the comparison to someone that I was talking to, that like, this looks like a PS2 era JRPG that I would be like, well, you know, like, the gameplay's really good. Yeah, it doesn't look the best, but that's fine. Like, that's kind of how I feel about it. Like, it's not, like, this is not a visual showcase. The gameplay is really strong. The only time that I think about the visuals is when the game doesn't even do a lot of lingering on, like, look at how nice this looks. There are moments when it does, and usually in those moments, like, it looks fine.
Sure. They're probably very careful. They're probably, like, found, they're like, this area doesn't look like shit. Put a cutscene in here.
But like, I only have those moments when I kind of took a step back and was like, oh God, this looks bad. Because I was having so much fun playing the game, which that's the reason why I'm so positive on it, despite one part of the game being horrendous, is because just the loop of playing the game is so much fun. The main quest is definitely pretty straightforward. If you're looking for something, you know, that veers off in crazy open-ended directions, this ain't it. There's a lot of side quests, and the side quests will put you down paths where you'll, you know, find out more about what to do with new Pokemon in the area or new forms and stuff, and do a good job of kind of highlighting just like all the things that you can do in the game, whether it's you know, you can get new clothing and stuff like that, or there might be certain items that are newer that you can use, or have different Pokemon function, even Pokemon that have been in the game before, like, you know, ones that have different forms, like Shellos, how there's different forms of that. And it all works really well together. Like, I had a lot of fun with just that basic loop of the game. And then catching Pokemon, increasing your Pokedex, you know, leveling up and raising Pokemon. They've done a lot of good things to make all of that work better. Some things of note, you don't have box anywhere in this game, which if you played, I think they had it, but Let's Go, Sword and Shield, Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl, all had the ability where basically wherever you are on the map, with a few exceptions, you can change out your roster of six Pokemon from anyone in your computer box. You can't do that here. I think it's a little bit deliberate because there's like a survival element when you're out in the wild.
Sure.
But you do have a lot more flexibility in how you control those individual Pokemon. So instead of having to go to like a move deleter, move tutor or whatever, once a Pokemon learns a move, you can just go into the menu at any point, as long as you're not in a battle, and go to change moves, and it'll, you know, give you a list of every move that your Pokemon knows, and you can change what they learn. There's also a place in the town that you can just basically like pay money to get TMs. And it's not like you're getting an actual item. It's like you'll go to this person and it'll be like, oh, train my Pokemon to learn Thunder. And you can do that. It's really nice, like extremely streamlined. Something that I know I was talking to Nintendo World Report's Justin Berube recently about how in Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl, TMs are all limited use items. And playing those games, you just get paralyzed with fear sometimes. You're like, well, what if I want to use this later? And that was the thing that I loved in Sword and Shield, that a lot of those TMs were unlimited use. So it'd just be like, all right, yeah, I'm just going to use this on everybody. Because if I overwrite it later, it's fine. I can use it whenever I want.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we kept for so long because that was the way it always was. And then finally someone went, does changing this negatively impact the game? No. Okay, why was it ever here? And like that sort of thinking is crucial to quality of life upgrades in video games.
And there's some other stuff, like even evolving. They have a new evolution animation that just looks really cool. It's just a big improvement. It also looks like a little like body horror-y because it like swirls the Pokemon in like a black wisp and you'll see it kind of morph a little bit. It's just really fun.
Yeah.
But in past games, like you would basically need to level up a Pokemon, and at the end of a battle, it would be like, oh, like, look who's evolving. And there was another thing that it does fall into that category of like, that's just how it always was done. We'll keep it that way.
Yeah.
Now, when you level up a Pokemon, there's just a button on the menu that's just like, oh, like, Pokeball will flash and you can press a button and it'll be like, do you want Chimchar to evolve? You say yes, it evolves. That also extends like when you meet certain conditions, it'll just show up that way. And they also make it pretty easy if you want to get all the evolution items that you need, which, I don't know, like, I never got deep into post-games and Pokemon games, so maybe there is a way where it's just, like, super easy to get all the evolution items that you want. There probably is shops in different games. Sure. This one, it's right in your main town, and it is, you have to do, going out into the wild, you'll find, like, it's like the Death Stranding, Dark Souls stuff of there's, like, items from other players left around the map. I think it's also just like auto-generated by random people. There were a lot of mavens that lost their satchels when I played. I think there was one time I went into an area and there were like four Maxes that lost their satchels. And I'm like, well, Maxes had a terrible day.
Yes. And has far too many satchels.
But you get those, you earn merit points, which then you take to a specific store and you can buy your leaf stones, your razor claws, what have you. Mm-hmm. There's one new one though that when I first got it, I like had a moment where I was like, wait a minute. It's called a linking cable. And the item for it, it just looks like a Game Boy link cable. And instead of having to trade Pokemon, which you can trade Pokemon in this game, I did not actually test it out over the course of the reviewing period, but you can trade Pokemon to people. That's basically the only online interaction. But you can use the linking cable to just evolve your Haunter into a Gengar, your Machoke into a Machamp. All the trading Pokemon can just be done that way. And for people wondering about, there's the ones that you would have to, they would have to be holding an item and you trade them. Now you just use that item. So like to evolve Magmar and Electabuzz, you just need to get the magmatizer and the electrizer or whatever. You just need to give them those items and then they'll evolve. It's just a lot of really nice streamlining for a process that, like, I would have a Graveler in my team and be like, well, I don't have anybody to trade him with, so I'm just not going to use him anymore. Now there's actually a way forward with that.
Yeah, it's a process that was very much built on there being two different versions of the game, too.
Yeah.
So that you had, like, a real reason to trade to get Pokemon you couldn't get, but that's obviously not... There is no second version of Arceus, so...
Yeah,
it kind of makes it like trading is sort of not as incentivized, it would seem.
I'm trying to think of anything else that I haven't really gone over.
I want you to know that every time you say move deleter, that other M has ruined the word deleter for me to the point where in the review, I debated putting a tiny Federation Marine in the corner of the screen when you said deleter.
And remember
but
me.
Ultimately did not do that.
But anything, do you have any questions, comments, what have you?
I don't think so. I think it looks cool. I've said it a million times. Turn-based RPGs are not my thing. Every time I buy a Pokemon game, I start it and then I stop playing and then I watch my wife play through the rest. But this is one where like I'm like she's going to get it and play it and I might. Yeah, like I'm going to watch and I might wind up getting it. It's hard with this one, too, because normally if I want to do that, like there's a second version. And so like I would get it almost just to be her trading buddy for her getting everything she needs to get. But in this case, I don't need to do that. So we'll see. This is a direction that I am very interested in seeing Pokemon go. I almost want to buy it just to like support it. Obviously, because the Pokemon company needs my financial support.
Yeah, your $60 will go a long way to ensuring the future of a
that
better
makes,
tomorrow.
For a tiny indie company like the Pokemon company, maybe they can hire, they could hire like another studio to make the game every other year. That would be nice.
But the battling is kind of just, it's the same. Like there's not, there's definitely some differences. Like,
I like that you can run around while you're battling.
Yeah.
That was
neat.
And you
can get hit by enemy attacks. Yeah. There's been a couple times where like I'll start the fight and then the enemy Pokemon will attack and I'll be like, oh crap, I'm too close to my Pokemon.
Can they like, if you start a fight while there's another Pokemon like nearby, do they like join in the fight?
Yes.
Because I saw a couple times where like you'd be fighting one guy and then like another guy would show up from like behind you.
Here's the thing that wasn't specifically embargoed, but I just didn't talk about it specifically in the review because it was something that kind of showed up organically and I think ties into something that they did embargo. So if you want to go into Pokemon Legends Arceus totally blind, leave.
You're like 40 minutes too late, but sure.
Yeah. So the game starts off and like I know people have talked about how technology, it's like he's got a phone. So the character that you play as is sent from the present day to the past.
Huh.
Like that, and that happens in like the opening cutscene is Arceus is like, you gotta go back, kid. And you wake up on
okay,
a beach.
Okay, God.
Yeah. And one of the things that was embargoed was you couldn't record the beginning of the game because your character is just wearing like a real present day t-shirt and flip-flops.
This makes sense because I do remember seeing in the embargo, it was like, don't show the modern clothing.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, there's why? Okay.
And it's not in like, this is, it's not even like deep in the game. Like, it's just there. So with that, like, I mean, it all ties into kind of the main story of there's above Mount Coronet, there's, you know, a distortion rift thing ties into, you know.
Oh, is that what the Death Mountain cloud is?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
But what happens when you're out in the levels at a certain point, you'll get a notification that like a space-time distortion is opening.
Sweet.
And if you go to that, it's basically like kind of like it'll be timing, but like different like kind of random Pokemon will just like appear and usually attack you. And like this is a way that like I think I saw someone mention that like this is just their way to like be able to include all of the Pokemon from Sinnoh, you know, in Diamond and Pearl, because like Magnemite does not make sense in the past, but if you have them come in through the space-time distortion thing, you can have a Magnemite. But the way those works is that like it'll just have like four usually high-level Pokemon just appear out of thin air as you're in this kind of like this dome, which is like all the like the things crackling and like there's a lot of particle effects. It runs fine though, but like yeah, you'll have it'll be like I got I forget the name of the Rhyhorn, the newer Rhyperior. I got a Rhyperior like. Probably that was like 10 levels higher than the rest of my party through this method. But like those, as far as the multiple Pokemon attacking you, like you'll get into that and it'll just be like, you know, let's say I'm like trotting in there with like a team of like level 40s. It'll be like a mess of like, okay, like one of them might be like a level 30, but then like they're like a bunch of level 40s and level 50s and you have one Pokemon out and there's like four of them attacking you.
and you can only, this isn't like the team battles that showed up in like the okay, so you can't throw out another Pokemon. You just have
and
the
it
one.
Is okay. And like, but some of those are like really good rushes. Because I've definitely like I've gotten my ass kicked in those to the point where like I'll have to run away or even because you can get hit by Pokemon attacks, and if you get hit too much, you pass out. And go back to the start. And that definitely happened to me a couple times, messing around in space-time distortions. Because then, like, a big Pokemon will be like, well, I want to try to catch him, and then I'll just get knocked out and die. Because also with those is if you, like, throw certain items, like, you can hit Pokemons with, like, spoiled apricorns. And then it'll, like they'll be in their alert state, and if you hit them with an item, sometimes they'll revert back to their normal state. So when I was in these space-time distortions, I would be, like, trying to hit the Pokemon that I would want to catch with an item, and then line up my shot with a Pokeball while I had, like, two other Pokemon trying to kill me. It's just, it's really fun. And, like, that's another thing of, like, just spending time in the world. You'll be going around doing other things, trying to, you know, finish side quests, you know, catch different Pokemon. And it'll be, like, space-time distortions forming. And it's like, all right, look on the map. That's where it's going to be. I'm going to work my way over there. This is going to be a great time. It's so good. The inventory sucks. That's another thing. It's well, got the Breath of the Wild problem.
That's what makes it mostly Breath of the Wild, yeah.
Yeah. So, and like, but with Breath of the Wild, it's not like, oh, you have to collect Korok seeds. No, like, there's just a dude in, like, the main quest area that's, like, you keep paying him more money, and then he teaches you how to more space in your satchel. And it gets to the point where you're like, pay me $20,000 to find more space. It starts off where it's like, pay me $10, kid. This pyramid scheme.
He's just like KonMari teaching you how to, like, roll your t-shirts really nicely inside your satchel so that they fit more efficiently. Does this Bidoof spark joy? No? Get rid of it. You'll have more room.
There is also, like, and I'm not totally up to date with all, like, the EV, IV crap with Pokemon. That is never how I've played the game. So you do have, like, your Pokemon box in this, but it's kind of pitched more as, like, it's presented as, like, you have a ranch back at the town. And you go in there and you can release them. And when you release them, and you also get these from other ways, you get, like, grit dust. But there's different levels of it. And you can use those to basically be, like, bonuses to your Pokemon's different stats. So, like, you can make them all, like, you know, level 3 of hit point, attack, defense, special attack, special defense, speed. And then, like, the next level of grit stuff, well, we'll then bump it up to 5. But as you release Pokemon, depending on the level of the Pokemon, you will get different grit items that then can increase, like, kind of the stat bonuses of your Pokemon. Like, there's a lot of different systems that all feed into each other in a way that it's hooked me in a way that no Pokemon has done since Pokemon Red and Blue when I was 10 years old. Like, that is, and, like, I'm nowhere near the biggest Pokemon fan, but outside of, like, I went on, like, a high school walkabout and didn't really play the series, but then came back to it with Diamond and Pearl in college, and I've played pretty much every entry as it came out since. But I would basically just play the main game and be like, that was fun, and move on. But sure. With this, like, I want to keep playing it. I hope they add DLC. I hope every Pokemon game is like this now, because it's just so much fun.
Yeah, that's always a great sign when you finish writing the review, take a deep breath, and then boot the game back up.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no, that's once you're no longer required to play and you're going, okay.
I believe I said, and now I rest. And by rest, I mean go play more Arceus.
Yeah.
Because this was a review that had I had to crunch, I will be honest. Sacrifice some sleep. But that's, you know.
Had the game not been as good, I'm sure you would have just said, fuck it.
Yeah, probably. It would have gotten to a point like, I didn't finish it, man. Or like,
yeah,
like, I mean, yeah, it was the kind of thing where, like, real talk, if I just got this game on Friday and started playing, like, might put the same amount of time in the period of time that I basically had a week to review the game. And yeah, I mean, it's a tight timeline. I wish that Nintendo and the Pokemon company would, like, give reviewers 2 weeks, because then it would make crunch less crappy.
But more realistically, it's just whether or not they give you any time at all.
That's also fair.
Plenty of major sites that did not get it, so
yeah,
it's very hard to plan for Nintendo, because you just don't know until you have the code, or you don't.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, I mean, Do we want to end on this 3D Zelda ranking from a listener?
Yeah, let's see how many episodes in a row we can have a 3D Zelda ranking in. I kind of like it.
It's our 2022 thing. We're just going to rank 3D Zelda games every week. I mean, my ranking's probably changing from week to week as I play more. But so we had our old pal James T. who a longtime listener.
James T. Kirk. Yes.
Yeah. James T. Kirk. Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I'll just read the whole damn thing. Because why not? Do it. Thanks for writing it all. Man, every time you guys talk about your Zelda order, I'm like, am I out of touch or is it the kids? I'm really enjoying your discussion on these. However, I feel like everyone's list is like the inversion of mine. I feel an irrational obligation to defend Twilight Princess and Ocarina of Time. Anyway, here's my thoughts for you gents to repudiate. 6, Skyward Sword. Get out now. I already sent you my thoughts on replaying this on Switch. Yeah, go back and I think it was an episode last summer where James wrote in his boss of Skyward Sword.
Yes, I do remember this. Yeah.
And I appreciated those thoughts, even if I probably disagreed and argued.
I think it was a long email.
It was a very long email. I think I read it. But IDK, both highest highs and lowest lows of series. I feel like this debate has been done to death, so no point in rehashing. Okay, that's fair. His number 5, Majora's Mask. So begins my contrarianism. I agree about the great vibes this game has, but my favorite part of Zelda is dungeons, and this doesn't have that many, though they are fun. IDK, I still don't like the 3-day mechanic. I think that comes down to preferences. For me, it's still tedious and stressful. I guess I don't place as much emphasis on side quests. The Bomber's Notebook is fun, but for me, without a guide, it's just frustrating. The game I really liked a lot more in 3DS, replaying it than I did in 9th grade. It's kind of crazy that this went from everyone hating it to now everyone thinking it's a goat. I guess I'm just not into side quests as much as others or the vibe. So I will, I feel like let's do this where as we talk about his entries, then we can, well, we'll sure. We, the people on the, because I feel like if not, then we're just going to be going back to what he said for the 5th entry.
I agree
with him on Majora's Mask as far as the N64 version.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I do think that the Bomber's Notebook on 3DS like makes that game way more enjoyable to play. And I also the 3-day mechanic really like stressed me out as a kid.
Yeah, and I get if you don't like side quests, then like that's a huge chunk of this game. Though I'll make the fun argument that there are no side quests in Majora's Mask. They're all the main quest line.
No, you're right. It's all part of the same story, because in order to, like, I would say getting the Fierce Deity mask in that game is like, that's completion, baby.
I mean, you have to do all the side quests to get the true ending.
I don't think there's another Zelda game that really has that kind of requirement. And I think that in Majora's Mask, I can hear the argument.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild is the only other one that has kind of a separate, if you don't get all the memories in Breath of the Wild, I think the ending's a little bit different. I wouldn't know because I'm not a psychopath who didn't hunt down all the memories right away.
Yeah, there is a little bit, and there is like a little bit of a stinger added to the end of Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, it's not like a huge difference.
I actually, after I get all the memories, because I beat it first, because there was that one memory that I may or may not have asked someone here to look at a strategy guide at his place of employment. I mean,
we may have got the strategy guide slightly before the game came out.
Yeah, because I could not find the last memory for the life of me, which is I knew where it was, but I wasn't standing in the right spot. Like, that's what would kill is that I basically stood everywhere except for the right spot for it. But anyway,
I do think the comment about dungeons is interesting in the context of another game that he has farther up on this list that we'll get to in a bit.
All right.
So just keep that in mind, dear listener, as we approach other games.
So number 4 for James is Breath of the Wild. You got to get Justine Berube. you got to get Justine Berube on for this. We will. I really enjoyed this game, but I don't get the wild admiration. Maybe I'm just too old school to super enjoy open world games. IDK, I miss dungeons, more story, a less minimalist approach to music. So many of the shrines are just fights. I find breakable weapons irredeemable. Combat just doesn't click for me. I mean, all the praise that's heaped on it, I agree, but I feel like there's all these things someone like Justin Berube would bring up that I also agree with. I also think this is the 3D, what the 2 touch games are to 2D Zelda. Like, it's not exactly in the same genre, but adjacent. I will say, right off the bat, I think he's right. Because I do, like, that's where we talked about it when I was on 2 episodes ago, talking about my 3D Zelda ranking to start this game club. I find it hard to compare Breath of the Wild to other 3D Zelda games. It's very different.
Right. Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you're saying. It must just be that at the end of the day, the game works more for me or something.
Yeah.
I have no issue with breakable weapons. I guess that would be my one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one that like thing. I actually,
the rest kind I'm of like totally that. Agree with.
Yeah. It's also the thing with Breath of the Wild that I recognize a lot of the faults in the game, but it's just that they don't matter to me.
Breath of the Wild gets a lot of crap for the breakable weapons, but that's a very like old school Western RPG thing.
Yeah.
Which I played a lot of as a kid and as an adult. So that is as a game design concept didn't strike me as strange when I played Breath of the Wild. So maybe that's just like it wasn't a new weird thing. So maybe that's why for me it was just like, yeah, okay, the weapons break. That's no big deal. That might be a personal experience thing.
So let's go on to James's number three, Wind Waker. I mean, everything that's been said about this has been said. Dungeons are too few and too easy, but everything else people praise about this, I agree with. I actually think exploring the Barren Sea is more fun than people give it credit for. I agree.
I agree that exploring the Barren Sea is great. For a lot of the same reasons that Breath of the Wild is, because Breath of the Wild also has a lot of empty space.
Yeah. And I think you might have done a video on empty space in open world games is actually kind of cool.
That video came up in conversation with somebody the other day, and I had the realization that video is like 5 years old.
Yes, because didn't you do it around Xenoblade X?
It was around when Breath of the Wild got its first real trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a while ago. But yeah, this was the game I was alluding to earlier where it's interesting to me that this game is as high up as it is when I feel like it has the Majora's Mask dungeon problems, but worse.
I feel like I will replay Majora's Mask in the near future as part of a game club. I feel like I need to replay Majora's Mask's dungeons and then replay Wind Waker's to feel exactly how I feel about this because...
Yeah, I think Majora's Mask dungeons are better. But I'll agree that both games have very few dungeons.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think there's technically less dungeons in Majora's Mask than Wind Waker.
Right.
I think the Majora's Mask ones, I would say, are better. But the only bad ones in Wind Waker to me, and I think, don't like people weirdly hate like Tower of the Gods?
Yeah, people dislike that one. And I think it's fine.
For me, and I think this is a personal thing, is that where that goes story-wise, like,
yes, yeah, it's such a huge story like, point
blew my mind.
Yes.
going to old Hyrule in that, like,
dude,
and so that's like it's like playing Tower of the Gods and the okay, maybe it's not the best dungeon, it's definitely, if you know, it's not a top 10 dungeon for me for sure, but the build-up of getting to old Hyrule, like that is 10 out of 10 amazing.
Yeah, I love that Wind Waker and Waterworld have the same plot twist, and that it hit me so perfectly both times. Because I definitely like playing Wind Waker, and I did not have Wind Waker spoiled for me as a kid. So like, when I got to that moment of like going underwater, and it was like, oh fuck! Like,
yeah,
it's so good.
The one thing in Wind Waker that I did have spoiled for me was a friend of mine got further in the game than me, and was like, dude, you need to see the Ganondorf battle. And it was one of those things, like, we got to the end of that, I was like, oh, it would have been cooler if I got to that in my own game.
Yeah.
Yes, that was very cool.
I do remember distinctly playing that battle as a kid for the first time and thinking that it was the first time in a game where I felt like you were just having, like, a straight-up sword fight.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't a lot of, like, extra stuff going on. It was just you and Ganondorf having a sword fight. And I thought, I had never seen a game that accomplished it that well. And in retrospect, it's not very impressive, but in like the context of the time,
it's just like I've never just had a system.
Right, but I never felt like I had a sword fight like that. And it's something where, you know, now you look at some like a, you know, any like Dark Souls game or more like kind of strategic combat, real time combat style game, and it does that way better. But it was kind of the first exposure I had to something like that, where like all of your right, like he's blocking all of your attacks and like you can just swing your sword and it just looks like you're sword fighting and it's cool. And I remember that being really impactful.
I mean, yeah, Wind Waker rules. I love it so much.
Yeah.
I really bring Wind Waker HD to Switch. Just make it happen, please.
Anytime now. Bound to happen eventually.
James is number two. This is where we're going to have discord.
Yeah.
Twilight Princess. I must be the lone defender of this game. IDK, I just adored it. Yes, it's a bit edgy, but I generally enjoy the story focus. My favorite aspect of Zelda is dungeons. This one delivers with some big bad dungeons. Maybe it's not the most original game, but it just took everything I liked about Ocarina of Time and tried to do it up to 11. Did it always land? No, but it gave me an epic dungeon heavy quest, and that's what I wanted. I had a great time replaying it on Wii U without the waggle. I think this one is the one I feel the most out of touch with everyone else. I'll say right off the bat, it's like, and this is, it's a lot of like, you could tell, I guess, a lot about a person by the 3D Zeldas that they like the most. It's like, dude, you just like dungeons. That's cool.
It's fascinating to me that you like dungeons this much and you also have Skyward Sword at the bottom of your list.
Yeah. Because I would say that Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, those are probably these 3D Zelda games with the best dungeons.
Yeah.
Skyward Swords are incredible.
But it also makes sense why you like Twilight Princess.
Yeah.
I will also say, I don't particularly think the story is that good in Twilight Princess, but if you vibe with the story of Twilight Princess and haven't read the Twilight Princess mangas, they're like dark and amazing and build off that story really well, and you would probably super enjoy them and you should read them. And I don't remember if it's done yet, but it's done soon if it's not done yet. But it's a really good series. I also will say, this is a weird one where, so I bought the GameCube version when it came out. I got the Wii version when I got my Wii, and I got it on Wii U. I never actually beat the Wii version because I hated the controls so much.
I own a copy of the GameCube version. I have not played it.
Yeah, that was how I played it when it came out.
Yeah, I got the Wii version the day the Wii came out and played mm-hmm. the snot out of it. Yeah, and then I replayed it. I actually was bringing up my review from almost 5 years. It's almost 6 years ago. Holy Lord. Twilight Princess HD. Yeah, I gave it a 9 out of 10, which is one of those things where, like, this is at the bottom of my 3D Zelda list. That just tells you how I feel about 3D Zelda games.
They're all borderline perfect. Like,
yeah. I do have a con in there that's just every character except Midna, which, honestly, I agree with still.
Yeah. Well, I think that factors into, I don't find the world, the way they present it, particularly compelling. And it's very clear what they were trying to make a gritty Zelda in direct response to the reaction to Wind Waker. And that makes sense. But that just didn't vibe with me quite as much. Though I do remember being super into the reveal trailer. And getting that on a DVD with Nintendo Power at some point early on, watching the hype for this game was
incredible. And that is, and I think that some of it of with the overworld and Twilight Princess, and like, I don't think it's really that compelling. I think it's also kind of to the point of, I don't connect with a lot of the characters, and not that Soraya and Ocarina of Time makes it more compelling to do things in the Lost Woods like that. It's not like that, no. But it is like the entrepreneurial baby in Twilight Princess is hysterical. but like, other than that, like, I just don't care about any of those characters. And
yeah,
I think if you care about those characters, then a lot of those side quests will be more enjoyable. Like, did not get into the bug stuff with Agatha and any of the two times I played this game. Whereas like in Wind Waker, like, I love that starting town. A lot of the Windfall Island stuff, like, all of that just really connected and resonated with me. And in Twilight Princess, I don't care about any of those people except for Midna.
Well, we talked about this a little bit with Matt and Alex last week.
The Yetis are wonderful.
The Yetis are good. But we talked a little bit, talked a little bit with Alex and Matt about this last week, but that's something that really hit with like Majora's Mask is, there was a sudden uptick in how side characters were written in that game. And yeah, I don't feel like Twilight Princess quite matches that level. I don't know that any of them have matched that level since. Where I'm that involved in the side characters, but
I don't think Breath of the Wild does a great job with it either, but fault of being so expansive.
Breath of the Wild's story is terrible. Yeah. I think that game is incredible, but its story.
I think some of the way the memories like tell you an out of order story. I don't think it's a good story. I think it is a clever way to tell one in a video game.
It tells its very uninteresting story in a very good way. I do like, there are some fun NPCs in Breath of the Wild. They do, like, I like the Bolsom. Really early on. Bolsom is great. And really early on, there's the one as you're going over the bridge out of the Great Plateau.
Yeah.
Where if you go up on the railing, he like talks to you about suicide. And it's like, what the? Okay. But it's like that. There's some really nice little hidden moments with those NPCs.
I guess thinking about with Breath of the Wild too, like all the, not all of the champions and the old ones and the modern ones, not all of them are great, but it's a good hit rate.
You can't all be Sidon and Urbosa.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say like Urbosa, but like the modern one for Gerudo,
Riju.
Yeah, Riju. But like, yeah, like Sidon is awesome. I really like Daruk and Yunobo. Man,
Revali's good too. Revali's just Falco, but like,
yeah,
Falco is good in any game.
I love how much of a dick Revali is.
Quick sidebar: I love in Hyrule Warriors: Age of Calamity that when you fight Urbosa, she's like had her mind controlled, but when you fight Revali, it's just because he's a prick.
Yep.
Like, there's no mind control happening. He's just an asshole.
All right, so James is number one, which Process of Elimination, and also what he referenced, it's Ocarina of Time. I still think this is one
been,
of the
it
best.
It could have been Link's Grasp of Training.
Yeah. I still think this is one. This one is the best. Maybe it's just because I played it when I was 12. Maybe it's because it was my first Zelda outside of watching the TV show when I was very young. I replayed it in 2018 on 3DS and still find it to be sublime. I feel like every successor did something better, but also did something worse. This just feels the most even to me. I think the child to adult dynamic is amazing and is worth repeating. I agree with that. The music has this great horror vibe to it. It has so many dungeons. I really think this still holds up as the greatest game of all time, but I'm sure I'm not rational about it or more willing to look over the aging aspects. I think there's so much about this game design from the HD era onwards I don't like. I may just be too much of a retrohead. The pinnacle of game design in 1998 is more appealing to me than the pinnacle of game design in 2018. Anyways, discuss if you feel like it. We did, James. Enjoying the retrospective 3D Zelda is my favorite game series, so I could listen to people talk about it forever. So, that's what we're doing. I do largely agree with Ocarina. Like, I think it's hard to separate Ocarina from the fact of, like, I could argue that it's one of the most important video games made in the 90s, made ever. Like, it is foundational for so many things that has been in hundreds of video games since 1998. And I would have totally, it's never really been my number one, but like, I remember playing it on 3DS, expecting it to not hold up. I was like, I love this game from when I played it when I was younger. I played it on 3DS. I'm like, oh shit, it actually like holds up very well. I think the 3DS version of Ocarina of Time is fantastic. I'm playing the N64 version on Nintendo Switch Online. Granted, not the best version of the game in
numerous
ways.
It's getting better.
Yeah.
They made the water better, apparently.
I do think that, it took 20 plus years, but I think Ocarina of Time has aged. And kind of put a little bit of a pin on that because we're going to have an episode talking way more in depth about Ocarina of Time, but there's so much that I love about that game, and it's hard to extricate the nostalgia of the memories of playing that game, you know, winter 1998. It's hard to separate that from how I view how this game plays. I had the same kind of like coming to a realization of a thing that was really near and dear to me as a kid in Super Mario 64. Actually just totally falls apart in the second half. Like Rainbow Riot is a travesty and I hate it.
Yeah.
And I think that Ocarina of Time on the whole like holds up better than Super Mario 64. Because I think it's a more even experience throughout. But like it's just an early 3D game. It's just a lot of the things in it, like there are tricks in that game that are so overplayed at this point. And it's not the fault of the game from when it was made in 1998, but looking at it in the context of 2022, like, no, it's aged. And that's fine.
Yeah.
It's still an awesome game. It's probably not my favorite game of all time anymore.
This does make me want to do a Zelda animated series viewing club where we just watch every episode of the Zelda animated series, just because he mentioned that as being the first exposure to Zelda.
I think I still have my DVDs of it.
I think I might have more than one copy if you need to borrow.
I think I said, because we did go through like where we got rid of a lot of DVDs because like we don't really use them, but like I kept a handful of like my TV shows because I'm like, well, these aren't like some of them aren't really anywhere, or like, you know, I wound up getting, you know, Batman the Animated Series on Blu-ray. That seems like it'll have a little more longevity. But like then there's certain things like my Adult Swim DVDs, because those things are wonderful, like Harvey Birdman, C-Lab. Not getting rid of those. But I think I still have my Zelda DVD. I think the animated show was fucking garbage. Entertaining. Awful. Yeah.
Yeah. Weirdly good soundtrack.
Yeah.
It does a really good job of arranging the music. So does the Super Mario Brothers Super Show. It might be the same guy doing both of them.
Yeah, I think so.
But they both do a really good job with their soundtracks, which is neat. Yeah, I don't disagree with anything really about your Ocarina of Time assessment. And I think that I just think that a lot of the Zelda games since it have done what it did better. I would include Twilight Princess in that list, which I consider very low on my list. But like you said, it tries to be Ocarina of Time cranked up to 11. And I think it largely succeeds at that.
Yeah.
I think Minish Cap, with the whole shrinking mechanic, does a lot of the best things about the Adult Link, Child Link thing. I think Twilight Princess tries to do that with the wolf, which doesn't really work. Ocarina of Time was great. They have improved on it. It's still very important, but I have trouble placing it above the games that have improved on its design since it came out, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I'd still give it a 9. So, yeah.
Now I'm excited to talk and play a lot more 3D Zelda games. I look forward to spending a significant part of our Ocarina of Time episode spitballing and pitching the Ocarina of Time Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yes.
Because playing Ocarina of Time now, I'm like, this is all I want. All I want is for Nintendo to hire Tetsuya Nomura and just make the dumbest fucking, like, it's like, oh, here is the fourth timeline. Sephiroth is here for some reason. Like I just, oh my god, I want it so bad. Like, make it an action RP. I don't care. Just give me, like, do something weird.
The entire thing would take place in Kokiri Forest. They would never make it beyond that point in the plot.
Yeah.
So the game would end with you walking into Hyrule Field.
Or no, the game would end with you meeting Zelda. That would be the final cutscene.
It ends with you meeting the Deku Tree. It's an entire game about getting your sword and shield.
But it is. I mean, I know it's a sacred cow and everything, but like, I think at a certain point, Nintendo can't trot out Ocarina of Time as like a look at how great this is. Like, no, like it. I think it has aged. It took over 20 years. I think it's aged. And I think, like, it's the same thing with Final Fantasy VII that I feel, too, is that, like, Final Fantasy VII, as the game was in 97, like, it's still there. They're still making it accessible.
Right. And it's...
That's great.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that version didn't go away. And you can still play that version on your modern consoles. Which would be the same with Ocarina.
You don't even need to call it... I mean, well, no, for marketing's sake, you want to call it Ocarina of Time. Remake. You could just call it like Ocarina of Chaos. Let's go. Like,
yeah.
Make it like Stranger in Paradise, the weird Final Fantasy game. But like it is like I would love to see like modern Nintendo basically be like, all right, like let's look back at Ocarina of Time. How could we take the structure of that game and make something new in 2022?
Yeah, it would be fun.
Yeah.
When it is, I mean, we're due for another remake of it, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's also, it's time for another remake. It's been 10 years.
Yep, that's how this works.
I think that's not as many topics, but definitely a lot to talk about.
Yeah, oh, geez, we've been going for an hour and a half.
Yep.
All right. Well, that makes up for our half-hour episode a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what we're going to talk about next week. Maybe there'll be a direct or something. That'd be cool.
Maybe Microsoft will buy something. You never know.
Sony,
with those
Sony
guys,
will buy Microsoft.
That would be... What's Microsoft? What would you have to...
I mean, that would
Microsoft
be too much
Microsoft must
money.
Be worth a bit of money.
Yeah.
At this point.
Well, not anymore. They just spent $70 billion. No.
Yeah, but that's like remodeling your home. Like, buying Activision is just equity. Like, yeah, that's that's going to come back.
But yeah, that'll do it for this week's episode of Connectivity. Feel free to send your questions about, you know, Metroid Breath of the Wild, 3D Zelda games, Pokemon Legends Arceus. Send them over to us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You can also hit us up on Twitter at ConnectivityMWR. Thank you so much for listening, and talk to you all next week. Bye.
Bye. This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.